never want to hear that level of enthusiasm again.
I apologize.
That was sometimes really, yeah. Oof.
I just get excited.
I know. I can feel it.
All right. Good. Then I need you to get excited, too. I need you to kind of bounce up and down in your chair a little bit.
I'm all out of bounce.
I'm doing it.
All right. Thank you, Ed.
Easy, boy. Easy.
See, now I'm getting pumped up over here. I'm going to bounce a little bit.
This week in PC Gaming, two zombie hunting parties cross paths. One of the survivors will not survive. Who could it be? StarCraft II beta releases a map editor, and it's got triggers. Dead Space is getting a prequel made entirely out of words and paper. A game is coming out on Evan's birthday, and he is very excited about it. Which game could it be? And Bad Company Duo's patch, but does it add more problems than it fixes? And as usual, this week we interview Michael Yazbek, designer for Mountain Blade, an action RPG kingdom simulator that I've seen Evan playing quite a bit recently. So as usual, the podcast will be at the end of the interview will be at the end of the podcast. So look forward to that. Hello, my podcast friends. It is Friday, April 23rd, and it is a beautiful day in this neighborhood. So what do you say we sit down, unbutton our sweater vests, and record PC Gamer Podcast number 220? I'm your host, PC Gamer editor, or Associate Editor Josh Augustine, and I only have one question for my fellow podcasters. Logan Decker, Editor-in-Chief of PC Gamer, won't you be my neighbor? Wow.
Free Josh. Josh is extra adorable on Friday.
That's what my outreach of friendship to you. That's what I get? Wow. All right. Well, let's see if senior editor Evan Lottie wants to be my neighbor.
I'm just letting this play its course right now. We can be neighbors. That's cool. Our desks are neighbors, so
yeah.
I'm not going to mess that up. Sorry if my voice sounds a little weird. I'm getting over illness.
That actually sounds quite nice, Evan. Are you using a new headset?
All right. No, I'm not.
I'm going to send my dog over to poop on your lawn.
Wow.
As long as you don't put it in a bag and light it on fire. And ring our
door. Oh, God. Remember that? Oh, it's horrible.
But yeah, the game coming out my birthday is the Arma 2 expansion, so I'm pretty much the happiest guy in the world right now. It's I probably subconsciously set that up with the publisher.
They made it for you.
I know. I mean, that's like your favorite game coming out on your birthday. So
yeah,
go ahead.
I've actually pledged to learn Arma this weekend.
Whoa!
Yeah, let me help you out.
Yeah,
I would love to get in there too and kind of tag along this tutorial because I could use some help as well.
I'm good at those.
You cannot simply just walk into Mordor.
But this is the idea. I'm going into the dojo, as it were, and I'm gonna learn the ropes. And fight for my country, finally, you know?
Absolutely. Your country happens to be the Czech Republic, but that's okay. Just develop some nationalism and you're good to go.
Yeah.
Logan, I feel like you'd be a really good helicopter pilot.
I want to be on the ground stabbing people in the face with my bayonet.
Are there bayonets in that game? That might be difficult to accomplish.
Oh, no, there's not.
There's mods, I'm sure. It's fine.
Okay. Right. I just want to stab people in the face. That's all. I mean, that's just my, you know,
it's your God given right.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of God given rights, Eric Belsas, intern at PC Gamer, will you be my neighbor?
I think I kind of one bettered that because we live together, Josh.
Whoa.
Not, you know, in the biblical sense, people.
That's true. All right. You are my neighbor. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Out of wedlock.
Oh. All right, nobody tell my fiance. And the man who produces, deduces, and always seduces, Andy Bauman.
Oh, man.
I don't know. It kind of rhymed and it just flowed.
I don't know where to take that.
Andy, you're not in the same office with it, so don't complain.
I'm not. I don't seduce anything.
I had a lot of time to prepare for this podcast, and some of it just kind of went over the edge. So I apologize for that one.
Josh needs more work. Is there any reviews that need to be done, Logan?
Is this what it's like when? Is this what people mean when they say that I'm scary? Is this the experience that they have?
Wow. Yes, that's. Are you finally feeling fear for the first time?
I know, a little bit.
All right. All right, so let's move on.
Can I share something totally off topic?
Please? I'm going to allow this. Yeah.
Are you going to? Okay, yeah, it's your show, so you tell me.
I like it.
You have 2 minutes. Go.
I just ordered my DNA.
What?
Is that-
yes. Today. No, okay, I feel a little bad because this offers only for today. And, you know, so if you hear the podcast after the 23rd, the offer's not going to be on anymore. But because, I don't know, it's DNA Day or something like that in America. And there's this website called 23andMe, 23andMe. Actually, it's linked on my Twitter account at Rock Legend. But they will sequence your DNA for $500. But today only, they're doing it for $99.
Wow. Is it because it's... Wow. 23rd?
Because it's like DNA Day or something like that, right? And the first thing I wanted to do was I wanted to like swab a squirrel's cheek and send that in to see if like they'd freak out at the lab. plus you'd have like I could have a poster of like squirrel DNA, right? Which I thought would be cool, but
yeah,
there's just no way I'm going to be able to get a squirrel by 5 o'clock tonight.
I can get you a squirrel by 5 o'clock tonight.
I know a guy.
No, it's one thing to have a squirrel, but it's another thing to have the little guy like open his mouth and put a Q-tip in there. It's just all those things aren't going to happen by this afternoon.
So do you want them to see what how much percentage-wise the symmetry is between squirrel DNA and yours, Logan?
I am curious about that.
Sure.
Yeah. But there's good reasons to have it. You know, it can screen you for your likelihood of having, you know, everything from age-related macular degeneration to, colorectal cancer, however unpleasant that may be. Plus, I think it's cool. $100 and I get my, DNA stuff or whatever. So yeah, it's DNA Day. So yeah, go to Iraq Legend on Twitter and you'll find a link to that if you want it for $100. And no, I'm not getting kickbacks for this. I should be, though. So I just wanted to share that because I thought it was interesting.
We're all very excited to see what your DNA looks like, Logan.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
So, other big news this week, other than Logan getting his DNA, also another three-letter word that starts with D, DLC. Left 4 Dead came out with The Passing. It just launched this morning. I think pretty much all of us have gotten a chance to play it now. What are our impressions?
So it's a two-chapter plus a finale campaign that, that's a little smaller than the stock campaigns in Left 4 Dead 2. And, sort of bridges the gap between the first chapter and the second chapter. A lot of it is in sort of these, I don't know what to call the neighborhoods. They don't really have a distinct feel, but they sort of resemble like the French Quarter levels of Left 4 Dead 2. And there's like a bunch of levels that take place in this underground sewer. Not levels, but sections. And I really wasn't impressed, honestly. I know it's free and like that sort of, hampers my criticism or how much I should be critical, but your time is valuable. Your time with your friends in a game is valuable. So, I feel like they're really unambitious, honestly. There was really nothing new or interesting that happened there's a big deal. And sort of the reason for the title of the DLC is The Passing. Like you're sort of passing the Left 4 Dead 1 survivors. They have a cameo in there. And I thought that was handled very uncreatively and very just simply and like as hands off as they could have done it, honestly.
Yeah. I was a little surprised. Most of the time I was expecting more of an interaction and getting their characters kind of how the characters would interact with each other. But even like Francis wasn't as grouchy self. Like, during the interactions, I felt like Francis cared more about me and was nicer to my characters than he's been to with these other three people he's been running around with through the whole first game. It was really weird when Francis was like, he said something like, "Don't worry, I got your back, buddy," or something. I was like, "Wow, that's the nicest thing I've ever heard you say," and you just said it to some random stranger. I don't know. Yeah, I thought they were very creative with the use of the witch and kind of placing. The charger was placed in
in very nice places. But yeah, it wasn't anything groundbreaking or any new concept. It was kind of more refinement of learning how to make those characters interact with the world in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it I'm not gonna say it fails. It's not satisfying on a macro level, but there are some micro touches. Like there's a certain witch that, you know, is, you see she's a member of a certain party. And there's like other people that are dressed up for this party, and you sort of interact with them, and you're fighting them all at once, and you get this nice context of something that happened in the world, before you got there, right? And that's honestly a little rare in Left 4 Dead. And you know, there's some new models, there's a few new voice bits. I was walking through a random room, and Coach, and there's like some pistols in the suitcase. And Coach is sort of like, he starts singing, because singing is what he does, I guess. And he's like, suitcases full of pistols and money. And
like, all right, that's cool.
That sort of made me giggle. And there, you know, there's like new wall, like scrawlings on the wall that are sort of entertaining. Like, the end is extremely nigh. And I don't know. But ultimately, nothing really that new, other than sort of fighting alongside the Left 4 Dead 1 survivors at the end, sort of. They're sort of like elevated and not threatened, so they're just sort of helping you out, maybe throwing an item down like once or twice and just sort of shooting random zombies. And I don't know. When this was initially announced, I'm even more confused. They did a, earlier this week, they put out a teaser trailer for this that shows like Rochelle and Francis sort of having some banter. I mean, it's, why put all that effort into making a teaser trailer for like such a small piece of content? It's a little bizarre, but I don't know.
Yeah. I think if they had kind of built up the character interactions between the two groups more, it could have been a much more exciting piece of content, where it is, you know, like a culmination, like bringing these two stories together. But as it is, it is a passing. Like, they're kind of passing each other on the street and like, hey, what's up? You want to come? No, see ya. Okay. And then they go on their way. And it's like, okay, I mean, I guess it's kind of interesting that you saw the characters from the first game, but they didn't do anything.
Yes, it's completely, they didn't take advantage of it. I mean, obviously Left 4 Dead has always been a game where story in a traditional sense, you know, telling how this infection happened, what's going to happen, what's the state of humanity, what the military's situation is. It's very, very scattered and sparse, honestly. So, you know, to me, it's like, well, why didn't they sort of give any hints or any explanation for how the Left 4 Dead 1 survivors got there, where they were coming from, like exactly how it fits in the timeline? There's none of that, and I honestly don't understand why they wouldn't give us just something. You know, it's just, I don't know. It just feels like levels, like you're in a level with more zombies, basically. At that point, there's no real progression of story or plot.
Yeah, and then we definitely ran into a couple drug dealers' houses. Because I opened those suitcases, and there was probably like 50 bottles of pills in there.
Whoa.
Yeah. That really surprised me, which I thought was cool, but it's just like an excessive amount, like an absurd.
But what I mean, what if they're prescription?
Then, I don't know. If you carry that many prescriptions around in your suitcase, you should visit the doctor more often. Eric, I know you got to play it. Do you kind of feel the same way? Do you have anything else to add?
I thought they added a new, I forget what they call it, special infected, but not
uncommon common,
yeah, which is a downed survivor. So it's like one of kind of you guys, except he didn't make it and he got turned into a zombie. And they're kind of unique because they carry health packs or grenades with them and stuff, which is nice because when you down them, you get equipment. But it wasn't quite as crazy as having clowns with squeaky shoes or anything like that. I guess my general feelings are like, I think that you could get a couple really good scavenge maps out of this DLC. So, maybe I'll have to hop in, see if, I don't know if they added them with the DLC or not, or if it's just the campaign, but as just a campaign, yeah, kind of underwhelming. I'm with you guys.
All right. Let's move on then.
Let's not. I actually had one more thing. I wanted to mention. Sorry. I mean, one other cool thing, they're going to be adding like these weekly mutations. You can sort of think of them in the same context as like the mutators in Unreal Tournament. So there's going to be a new mode that you can jump into that, for this week at least, it's like realism versus, which, I don't know, it is kind of a strange one to introduce. It's really not that different. It's basically realism, which we've already had access to, but in versus mode, okay, they basically change some values in the background. But it's a cool concept. I hope they do something interesting with it. But if you like us, were not completely satisfied with the passing, or you're just looking for more Left 4 Dead 2 content in general, head on over to l4dmaps.com or, you know, your favorite Left 4 Dead mods website. Search for a map called Contact. It's an amazing, like, sci-fi scavenge survival map. It looks like Doom 3, basically, but, you know, within the context of Left 4 Dead, and there's, like, blue suns in the background. It's on a space station. It's really, really something new and interesting and different. And there's more great stuff out there being done by the community.
Wow, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, l4dmaps.com.
Have any of the community maps ever had the two sides interacting with each other, the two groups of survivors?
There was a mod in the first Left 4 Dead where you could bring in, like, 13 survivors or something.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it was just, like that was just sort of a tweak.
Yeah, because I'd be interested to see, like, what kind of people, how people think these characters would interact with each other. Like, what would Francis think of Coach or something like that?
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's kind of what we were hoping for, is, like, that kind of, like, fun dialogue, because, anyway, I don't want to get too much into it, but it was kind of let down in that way.
My guess would be he hates sports.
Yeah, that's probably true. All right. Also this week, a patch came out for the StarCraft 2 beta that introduced the map creator. And they have triggers, which is basically, you know, like, if 5 Marines step on this point, a Zergling spawns or something like that, that allows people to kind of create custom maps with triggers like that. I remember using trigger maps to try and create an RPG in Age of Empires 2. Like, I was trying to make a map where you could go around and, like, make a deal. If you work on this farm, then I'll give you money, and you can use this money to buy a horse and do all this sort of stuff. Have you guys done or played around with making maps in RTSs before? Is that something you guys enjoy doing?
I definitely fooled around with the Command & Conquer Red Alert map editor when I was in high school. It was one of those situations where I had to, like, be in class, and actually this is probably middle school, sorry, and just sort of draw out ideas for maps in my notebooks during class and stuff like that, bring them home and try and plot them out. And I think the thing I did most with them is just create, like, ridiculous scenarios and, like, ridiculous land masses where, you know, I was in this, it was almost like a, I don't know, like an assembly line of torture, honestly. It's pretty sadistic, but, like, I'd put my own base on an island, and there'd be, like, one extremely narrow lane, you know, flanked by rivers that only enemies could filter through there, so it'd be, like, the most well-defended place ever, and I'd put Tesla coils all around it, and I'd just basically create this gauntlet of electric terror that they would walk through, and, you know, infinite resources and things like that. It's just fun to see those things play out, right? It's always, like, in the back of your mind when you're playing a strategy game or another game, at some point, like, what if I had all of this resources, or what if I had infinite ammo, or what if I had this, and just to experiment that way as an exercise is fun.
So, no, kind of looking back at playing RTSs, do you guys have, like, a favorite moment of kind of when triggers were used in games on a certain map, either custom made or campaigns? I don't know, because I'm really excited about map editors. I love when RTS games include map editors. If they don't, I get kind of bummed out about the game, just because as awesome as the campaigns are and as great as, you know, the multiplayer maps that the games are released with, just the power of a whole community working behind it just produces great stuff. I love to see that. I'm really excited to see kind of what kind of alternative storylines kind of players create with this. Does this excite you guys about, does this get you more excited about StarCraft 2 at all? Or you're more interested in the real stuff?
I mean, I'm definitely excited. I think with, like, a modern tool set, there's going to be an amazing community that comes out of StarCraft 2 that does interesting, like, Dota-like things and, like, Diablo-like things within the engine. I really hope that's possible, just to create little, like, independent games within the context of the engine. And, you know, I love the idea of, like, being a single Terran Marine and just going through a little adventure, and, like, I don't know if it'll accommodate text or, like, audio files or custom, you know, custom assets in any way, in a really good way, but I'm hoping that stuff comes to be.
I too hope it comes to be, but it seems to me, it just doesn't seem as versatile an engine. And this is me having not seen much besides like down, like what's online of the map editor. But I mean, you don't have like heroes and you don't have those RPG statistics to modify with the StarCraft engine like you do the Warcraft engine. So I hope maybe like they're hidden somewhere in there and that people can unlock and do really, really cool things, because that would be exciting. I played a lot more of Warcraft 3 tower defenses and Dota, that sort of thing, than I ever played Warcraft 3 actual multiplayer. So I really hope it is super versatile and super fun. I guess right now I'm kind of skeptical, I guess maybe is the best word.
I mean, you have to believe Blizzard's going to put a lot into this custom map editor, because they've gone through the effort of adding kind of the online store through Blizzard, through Battle.net, that will distribute these mods and even allow people to sell their mods and custom maps through Blizzard. So, I mean, there is money here for Blizzard, so I think they'll be willing to invest into this. And just seeing the expansion, or seeing the explosion of Dota, I mean, you have to believe that Blizzard's going to put as much power into this tool as possible. But, yeah, so I hope so. And I'll try a little Space Marine RTS, finally get it right this time. Because, man, I put so many hours into that map and it never worked. I was a little disappointed. So also, Dead Space 2 is getting a prequel novel. I love books about games. Because to me, a game isn't so much just about kind of the one experience. Like, I love games like MMOs and Dragon Age and RPGs that kind of let me eat, sleep, breathe, live in this world for a little while. Do books about games kind of appeal to you guys at all? And Logan, I know you love Dead Space. Are you excited about reading a book about Dead Space at all?
No. I just want to play it.
Is it because you don't think the book... Because you like Dead Space because it's kind of scary and terrifying.
Absolutely.
And you don't think a book can like capture that same thing? Or you just don't like books about games?
I don't buy that it'll capture the experience. Although I would love to be proven wrong. I'll definitely pick it up and give it a look. But my hopes aren't high. You know, I think the game was exciting because you were there and the jeopardy was there. You know, the fun for me is in trying to survive.
Yeah. And not necessarily the lore or the universe itself.
Yeah. And you know, and the thing is when you, I don't know, I do have a bit of a prejudice in that. When you write a book to spec, you know, basically, somebody has to touch all these different bases. Okay, you have to explain why this was there or where this came from. And it's just generally not the way to generate the best writing. You know what I mean? It's great fan service, but it doesn't mean it's generally not the avenue toward the best novel.
Sure.
Yeah.
It is part of EA's business model over the past couple of years. I mean, they did one. They did like a comic book or some sort of anime, I think, for the first Dead Space. They did
it. Yeah. And I don't think, you know, don't get me wrong. I don't think it's, I don't look down on this book or anything like that or their effort to broaden a game's horizons. I mean, I think it's fantastic. It's just personally not that appealing to me.
Yeah. Crisis 2 is going to be getting a comic book, though. I'm going to be curious if they have the right artist. I just want to see that nanosuit in action, punching stuff, you know?
You know, the difference for me would be like, I would be more inclined to buy like Sam and Max books.
Yes.
You know, for the comedy, you know, and the characters.
And because, definitely in that context, like the original author was sort of involved a little bit in developing the game. Like they feel a little more closely connected. That like the dialogue, like you said, is like a core part of that game. So it transfers.
Yeah. And nicely. I don't, you know, Dead Space and Crisis, great games, but memorable characters? No, not at all. I can barely remember what anyone was called in either game. You know, they were just sort of, you know, they're just sort of there. So I think I would also be much more interested in reading a book about a super, super memorable character that really stuck with me, like Alex from Half-Life, you know?
Ooh. Time for me to look up some fan fiction.
Wow. Not while we're doing the podcast. You see?
Yeah, okay.
Ooh, look, Logan, and Alex and Jade from the Beyond Good and Evil crossover.
You know it exists out there. If you can think of it, it exists.
Jade descended down the elevator shaft.
Jade was taking photographs of Alex surreptitiously.
As Alex pressed her hand on the elevator glass longingly. longingly. All right, let's get out of this.
Yeah, let's go ahead and move on.
And then Paige tells Jade, hey, I thought I was the pig. I'm sorry. Okay, let's, yeah. Eric, yeah. I can't believe you brought us down this road.
Yeah, I'm just a bad person, you know?
Bad influence, really. But now is the chance to redeem yourself, Eric. There's a Bad Company 2 patch came out this week. I don't know, that's been kind of mixed reviews. What do you think?
Fixed some problems and added some more problems.
I need to know first, because I've been trying to figure it out, and I haven't touched it myself, but does auto-balance finally work?
Sometimes, from the best I can tell.
Come on. This is such elementary stuff, DICE.
Yeah, it seems like I have seen people who have had themselves switched, but I've still been in games that are completely unbalanced and don't seem to be switching. So I'm not sure what the trigger there is or when that happens, but it seems to work sometimes now. But it seems to have added other issues. I'd never had my game bug out or crash on me until this patch, when it has a couple times now. So that's problematic, but it seems like the server browser works now. My favorites don't get deleted. It saves your loadouts between games, so you automatically load into whatever your most recent weapon setup was.
Thank goodness.
That's a good improvement, you know? But it's just not there yet. You know, servers have gone through, what, 10 patches now? I think they're on R10.
Yeah, I jumped in the server browser last night just to check it out, and I played for like 10 minutes. But like the server browser, I don't know if this happens to you, Eric. There's a page of game, like, of servers that comes up, and their ping is all one.
Because those are the ones you can't connect to.
What?
Yeah. For some reason, instead of not available or just not there, servers that you cannot ping come up with a ping of one. A really, really odd choice.
It just really seems like a simple thing to fix. I don't know. Maybe I don't understand network engineering and infrastructure, but
they nerfed my precious, precious M60.
Oh, so no.
I'm not as effective of a point machine anymore, you know?
What did they take down? The damage or rate of fire?
Slightly less accurate, slightly less damage. Yeah.
Wow. Less accurate when running. There are actually a pretty good sweep of like minor balancing changes to a lot of weapons, like helicopter cannons and things like that. Range, the lethal blast range of the M40mm, you'll be glad to hear.
All right.
For long range, has sort of been reduced a little bit. So I don't know. It's a lot of like minor stuff that you probably won't notice immediately, or you won't see it like as a big dramatic improvement or change in your weapon loadout. But hopefully, it, you know, over time, over rounds and kills and objectives, it'll feel better.
So let's go ahead and jump into some listener questions.
Hello, PC Gamer Podcast. Mitch again here. I have sort of a unique question here. It's actually about alternative input devices, or rather, actually, this is an output device. There are talk about, you know, crazy output devices that would never work. One is actually like a scent smell device. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but maybe it should be kind of reconsidered, because I had two unique smell experiences, you could say, during gaming. The first one was while playing The Thing, you know, that game based on the movie several years back. Now, Logan, you might want to close your ears for this one. At the
Where is
time,
this going?
I had a mouse trapped my wall and it actually died. So I had this rancid smell. I know it's disgusting, but I had actually lit a scented candle to offset that smell. So I had this weird, like, rotting flesh and smell of flame, which is very appropriate to the game. It was also very cold in my room. But anyways, the other time was while playing Dark Sector. The day before, I had been doing some soldering and also using some epoxy glue to glue another thing. And so that made like a strange smoldering metallic smell with a hint of lead, which is really appropriate to the, you know, metallic odd material in the game. So Yeah, both of those times, the smell really enhanced the experience in some way and really made that memory really strong in my mind. So whenever I happen to come across those smells, I really think of those games. So I don't know, just some food for thought. Maybe a smell output device for games. I don't know. So what do you guys think? I don't know. It sounds kind of crazy, but just like to, you know, get a little discussion going about that. So, all right, great podcast, and thanks for taking my question.
Yeah, I'm sure that was a very memorable experience, but so was the time that I actually drank moldy orange juice and I threw up. And it haunted me for, like, years. And, of course, whenever I had orange juice, I would remember that event. But I don't want to remember a mouse dying in my wall. Like
I was in my sister's bedroom, and she had a glass of water with a bit of water left in it, so I drank it. And that's when I realized that she had been sick, and it wasn't water. It's where she spit.
That's rough. So this guy's telling us, basically, whenever like he sees a dead cat or smells a dead cat or something, it reminds him of Dead Space.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's make that peripheral. Yeah.
You know, they have actually tried several times to get this technology off the ground. I don't know if he's aware of it. What was it? Digisent or something like that, I think, was the last company to try it. When I worked at Maximum PC, they actually had wanted to come by and demonstrate these things, but they never really got past the prototype stage. And yeah, they had been, they imagine that someday you'll be shopping on Amazon and you'll get to smell the cologne you're buying before you buy it. But you know, it's sort of like, you know, obviously you can't just generate a smell, any kind of smell on the fly. You have to have it sort of in there already, and how that would work, I'm not really certain, but I do have an answer for this guy though. You know, they have those aluminum spice trays that you get in Indian food stores. And so they have like 12 spice trays with aluminum cap tops on a rotating platter. And what you can do is you can put carrion in one, like from a rat.
Right.
That has been in like a warm room for a while. Mm-hmm. And put it in one. And you can put like, you know, poop in another one.
And you like a lazy Susan.
And then just label them all. And then when a certain scenario comes in a game, like you come across a dead body or you're in a urine filled alleyway, just pop the top off.
Yeah. You can come prepackaged with little boxes of like their most used scents. So like like Left 4 Dead would have kind of the rotting flesh and maybe like gunpowder and fire.
Yeah. When I went to go see Avatar, you know, I was sitting next to this guy who, you know, you can like kind of tell when somebody's had a cold and they've gotten over it, but they're still like, they smell not so good because they're all like, you know, their sinuses are, you know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. It's really gross. And this guy was like, you know, oh, he kept coughing and then I would smell it and I'd be like, oh my God. And I just wanted to kill all the Na'vi because I was just so angry. You know, I'm just like, let him die. I don't care. I don't want to be sitting here. So yeah, I mean, I hear where this guy's coming from. My sense, I have a really good sense of smell and it definitely keys certain feelings and emotions, but as a practical matter, I don't really see it taking off, but, who knows, you know, the world of tomorrow holds many mysteries.
Yeah. I will say the ride at Disneyland where it's soaring over California, it's in their California Adventure, and like they put the smell of like pine trees and oranges and rivers, and it's amazing. I love that ride.
Nice.
I love those smells, but the truth is most video games aren't about pretty smelling worlds. They're about worlds in destruction and chaos with infections and zombies and monsters. Not the sort of things that you'd want to be smelling all the time.
Can you imagine what you smell like when you peel the nano suit off after a day's work? I mean, holy God. All that jumping around and maximum strength, you know.
Maximum deodorant.
Yes.
Seriously. Dude, why isn't Gillette making that deodorant right now with like little hexes on the packaging?
Well, they should. Yeah, I'd buy that.
I've always wondered how they even get that on. Like, do they have to zip each other up, you know?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, do they actually peel?
Like, I don't know.
Oh. Or you like can never take it off. Once you get in it, you're like fused with it for life.
Oh, wow.
Nomad's struggle. His great sacrifice.
Seriously though, maximum deodorant. Make it happen.
Yeah. Okay.
With that guy's voice as like a pushable button on the product.
Did you ever?
No, every time you use it, it activates the voice. Maximum deodorant.
Did you ever try playing Crysis with the female voice?
It's just not right.
Dude, I played it for like 2 seconds. I was like, oh, f*** this. I'm going back to the male voice.
Yeah. Oh, I got to DigiSend technology. DigiSend technology intends to change the interactive entertainment experience. The idea is to send enable movies, games, music, animation, or any digital media.
Last updated January 31st, 2003.
Oh. Thank you.
Okay, I guess
can work with ebooks.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah.
And so yeah, you're reading, and then he walked into the urine-soaked alley, and then pff, right in your face.
Or you could just get a cat.
I was in Galveston, Texas, and they had some park had a SpongeBob SquarePants ride, and at a certain point in the ride, the chair in front of you squirts water all over your face.
Wow.
And yeah, I didn't see that coming. And luckily, it didn't smell.
So it was just water.
Yeah.
So let's jump to the next question.
Hi, this is Tom from PA. I just wanted to know how you felt about guessing the multiplayer mod for Just Cause 2. Also, I'm using a Rock Band 2 mic. Just because it's a show, just because it's a console peripheral doesn't mean I can't use it for
you.
First off, hearing Kristen's voice on the answering machine for this thing really made me miss Salvatore's awesome insight in PC gaming. How's it going, guys? This is Nathan from Davis, California. Quick question. I completely forgot what it was. Man, I love doing this off the cusp. Let's see. Do I have any other questions?
That was awesome.
It's cool. We'll wait.
Hey, Dan, I am pretty sure you're the executive editor of some other magazine. What is it? Thanks, guys. You kick all sorts of awesome...
What?
That is the greatest question ever.
One day I'll remember what I was trying to say.
You know, later. I hope that was medicinal marijuana.
I was going to say, what substance is happening there?
You know, we get to see Kristen... We barely get to see Kristen ourselves. She moves at the speed of light these days. And you see her, like, rocketing down the hallway and rocketing down the other hallway. And,
You know, you hear her before you see her.
Way before you see her.
Yeah. When you're a publisher, When you're a publisher, you get a jetpack.
Oh, she should, you know? Because, she just goes, you know? But she's doing well. She's doing a bang-up job as our publisher, but it involves moving very fast. So that's not something I'll be doing anytime soon.
She also does other things besides just moving quickly, but that is part of it.
I never get to see any of them. I just see the moving quickly part.
See, I just when you said that, I just pictured like doing like NASCAR loops around the building, just kind of in circles. Should be cool. Let's have maybe a real question this time.
I enjoyed that. That was terrific.
That was a fun question.
Hi guys, this is Ballistic Warrior on Steam. I just want to say I love your magazine and I love your podcast. What game would you like to see graphically redone? Because the Deus Ex series was...
Well, we got half of a real question. We'll
Did he fall asleep?
don't
luckily we got the gist. That was good. I mean, he got the number one, I think. That would probably be on most people's minds, which is, God, give Deus Ex a facelift.
Yeah.
You know, I think my number two would be, I mean, I realize System Shock 2, you know, has texture packs and all that, but they're, you know, it's all very, it's, yeah, you know, there are AI packs here, texture packs over there. I would just like to see it get an official sort of overhaul, as well as the controls, which I really, you know, they kind of bug me, but that's, that'd be the number two, the two games, two top games on my list.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, okay. Well, for me, it's a game I've mentioned probably countless times before. It's Free Space 2 by Interplay.
Oh yeah. Good point.
There, you can go into the registry actually and hack up the textures because they downgrade them because computers couldn't run them back then.
What?
Yeah, it's really odd.
So how do you find this? What would you Google, for example?
Gosh, it's like Free Space 2
texture. Registry hack, like, texture hack,
textures or something. But even so, everything but the explosions haven't aged all that well. That game has spectacular explosions. But I would just love to see that thing in, like, the Crytek Crysis engine or I don't know. It could be so beautiful. And right now it's very polygonal.
Oh, MechWarrior. I'm sorry.
That air hump is a convenient segue into mentioning that MechWarrior 4 just finally got approved by Microsoft that is going to be released for free sometime soon. They're just waiting for Microsoft approval, so air hump all you want, mech loving kids. Yes. Yes.
Is that good for you guys to hear?
Yeah. I enjoy that.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of the low-hanging fruit when you definitely mention it.
Good thing you can smell that one, you know?
Oh, look.
I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry.
You're bridging topics. It's good.
I didn't want to lower the, you know.
The bar.
Yeah.
Okay. We talked about it last week. XCOM is kind of a perfect one. For me, like, the reason I don't play that game and don't, like, go back to XCOM is because the menus are so dated and they're nested menus and, like, there's so much input that you need to do just to do one thing. The low resolution doesn't really help that. So any kind of facelift. And, you know, again, we mentioned Xenonauts last week, I think. Xenonauts.com, probably the best true to XCOM recreation in development right now by an independent studio. Go check that out and be reassured.
Yeah. They're already doing all my favorites. I mean, Monkey Island was my first choice by a long shot. And I mean, just getting all those, I can't wait for Monkey Island 2 to come out. It's going to be amazing. TIE Fighter, I've mentioned a couple times on here, I think would be perfect. Fairly easy, simple to do. Well, relatively, I think. I would love to see a nostalgia. I don't necessarily think it needs to be made, but I would love to see, like, Age of Empires 2 redone. I just loved Age of Empires 2. That's just one of my favorite games. I'd love to see, like, just that exact gameplay, because I've been playing a lot of StarCraft 2, and I'm getting better at it, but, you know, I kind of miss the days when it was a slower-paced RTS, and I would love to see just a graphical update on a slower-paced RTS that you could get into.
Like the pace of Myth 3, which I thought was a little more my speed. Is that kind of what you're talking about? Did you play that?
I didn't play Myth 3, no.
Oh, I liked it. That was fantastic.
Maybe I'll have to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know how good it's going to look.
Did it hold up? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We should do it as a game club, and then everybody.
I remember I played the whole game at probably 18, 19 frames a second. I had a 486 SX, I think, at the time. It was huffing and puffing.
Also, if it's not too soon, I would love to see a graphical update of WoW.
that would be nice.
Yeah. All right, next question.
Hello, PC Gamer. My name is Nick from New Hampshire. And my question for the podcast this week is, do you think there'll be a Warcraft 4? Warcraft 3 was a great game, and I'm curious if the franchise will continue, considering I think WoW kind of stole a little bit of the wind from the sails of the typical Warcraft genre. Anyway, keep up with the great podcast, and I look forward to the next issue.
Intriguing question.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And let's take that a step further, though, because, I mean, Warcraft 3 was successful. People loved it. We rated it well. Let's take this a step further and sort of organize Blizzard's software priorities, like what we think things are going to come out in and what order. Yep. So we know StarCraft 2 seems like it's going to be the first coming out this year before Cataclysm. Mm-hmm. That's fair to say?
Yep.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Cool. Yeah. So then probably Cataclysm end of this year, maybe early next year if something happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
My bet is on this year.
Perfect. Diablo 3 after that?
Yep.
Okay, and then it sort of gets hazy. So we're thinking about the unannounced probably new IP MMO.
They've confirmed it is new IP.
They've confirmed it's new IP. Yeah. Or a Warcraft.
Stars Kathy Bates.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Or a new IP. Or the Protoss. Or would it be the Zerg? Heart of the Zerg.
Zerg.
It would be Heart of the Swarm, yeah.
Heart of the Swarm, thank you. Expansion for StarCraft 2.
I feel very confident that I can predict this.
Do it.
I'm Zerg, Protoss, MMO, Warcraft 4. Because they're definitely going to bring back Warcraft 4 because they've talked about how they want to keep their two RTSs because obviously they have two RTSs. And they want to keep them separate. And they're doing it by keeping StarCraft the fast-paced, quick matches, micro, and Warcraft focus more around hero units. They don't want heroes.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they will definitely carry on Warcraft, but they'll do it after they introduce the new MMO, start weaning people off of WoW, so that the main storyline of Warcraft can be in Warcraft 4.
Now, Josh, I would see at least two, if not three, more WoW expansions before we see Warcraft 4. I mean, don't you agree?
That's 6 years. No, I don't think 6 years. I could see one more after Cataclysm as, before the new MMO. They'll keep doing expansions for WoW. I could see one more in 2 years after Cataclysm. So that's 2012. And then the new MMO. Two years after that.
Mr. Augustine, that is some world-class analysis, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, that was extraordinary.
Thank you.
That you're providing it free of charge to the world is staggering.
You could set your watch to Josh's predictions.
Yeah.
I do accept tips in the form of cookies and or other sweets.
Fantastic. He predicted the other day the very hour my banana would turn.
Wow.
It was amazing. And sure enough, on that hour, the first traces of brown began to appear on the southern end.
My God.
I almost frightened myself with that one. Yeah. Yeah. It was spot on.
Yeah. So, you know, underestimate this guy.
What do bananas and Warcraft have in common, though?
Don't be a hater. Don't be that guy, all right, Andy.
All right, sorry.
All right.
So if you need me to predict your fruit's fortunes, go ahead and send me an email or drop a question. I'd be happy to help out. All right, so let's go on and jump on over to playlists. Logan, what have you been doing?
I went on a nostalgia trip and I replayed Prey, which was awesome. I'd forgotten how awesome it was. I really enjoyed it. It's just pure entertainment, wall to wall. And then I replayed Resident Evil 5, which was just a hair less thrilling than I remember, but still a great time. But it does remind me how revolutionary Resident Evil 4 was. And this didn't hit those, every one of those peaks. And now I'm going to put Childish Things behind me. And, this weekend I'm going to play, this PJ Winterbottom thing, which should have interesting smells associated with it.
I heard he likes pies. Yeah, pies.
Yeah. And I'm going to, finally stop being a wuss and I'm going to man up and play, Arma.
Hell yes.
Yeah. And I'm gonna see if I can manage as a team member without being murdered by everybody on my team.
Cool.
I wish you best of luck in that.
Yeah, me too. I'm gonna need Evan's help.
All right. And speaking of Evan, what are you playing?
Oh, I've been digging into Sam and Max Penal Zone. The inaugural episode of their new season, which has been awesome. Just so impressed by, it's not like world-class animation, it's not Pixar, obviously, or anything like that, but the care put in the presentation. I mean, I was surprised by it in the same way in the Monkey Island remake by Telltale. So it's just great seeing like the amount of work they put into every scene and building in like dialogue. I love the new narrator. He's basically like a cross between like Alfred Hitchcock and a Twilight Zone narrator. Just the way they present that character is so fun and just really just beats the hell out of my sci-fi 60s funny bone. so that's been terrific. I haven't finished it. I'm sort of like really taking my time and letting it happen. What else? Yeah, a little bit of Bad Company. Still playing a bunch of Tetris Friends, TetrisFriends.com, some Mountain Blade. And I'm hoping to finally jump on a little game called Beat Hazard, which Eric can tell you more about.
Oh, right.
People have been enjoying.
I started that last night, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I guess I should mention, I built a new system last weekend, and that went well. I've got a Core i5 in there now, two 5850s. First time on Windows 7, and everything's going well.
So what are you thinking about Windows 7? Big improvement? Not noticing a difference?
It's really so. I used Vista 64 for the longest time, and like, hey, I'm sorry, I never had any issues ever. I had like system restore a couple times, but big deal. But it's fine so far. I mean, performance wise, I don't really notice too much of a difference, other than the new hardware. My biggest pet peeve, maybe you guys can help me out. I haven't really like tried to solve it yet. I like the old style of taskbar where it didn't group things automatically. I can probably change that just in properties, right?
Yeah. If you just right-click on the new taskbar and go to properties, it's all in there.
Thank goodness. That really annoys me for some reason. They try to group my stuff, tell me what to do.
It's like, I adore it. You just scroll over it, and it pops open little versions of all your windows?
I guess. I don't know. I'm already so efficient. I already like keep my programs that are running so slim anyway that I don't have to worry about it. Anyway, it's a minor thing. Sorry to ask. Tell us about Beat Hazard, Eric.
Beat Hazard is... Yeah, that's... Logan just summed it up, except add some spaceships and lasers and explosions. It's a crazy cool game. Came out like 2 days ago. Where basically it's kind of like Asteroids, where a twin-stick shooter, if that... rings true to you. Geometry Wars would be the closest example. I'm not sure that came out on PC. But you load up your music into the game and it generates all your levels and like, and how you fire your guns based on the music. So every time there's like a guitar riff, your ship shoots missiles and enemies will stream on screen to the like beat of the bass drum. And it just leads as you upgrade your ship and you pick up like volume up, which just makes the music louder. All these crazy upgrades, the visual effects get absolutely insane to the point where I think a person with epilepsy could not play it because it, like in a dark room, it looks like a disco party's going on. There's flashing lights and the colors are changing and there's lasers and explosions. And it's so much fun. Because, like, you get the right music in there, and it's just a whole new way of experiencing your music in gameplay mode. For me, it's like, it's better than Audio Surf for me.
Easily. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels more interactive, more fun, more frenzied. It's a blast.
Yeah. And I mean, we shouldn't say, like, we love Audio Surf, and, like, it sort of helped found that idea. And then, like, this is sort of an extension of that idea. And that's, like, a nice thing to see. But my biggest question you, a couple days
ago.
Ladies
and gentlemen, Rob Smith in the house. Oh, my God.
Former gamer EIC.
Oh, Rob wait. Smith. He just came by to vandalize the joint. Now he's going already.
Gosh.
Sorry. All right.
But yeah, my biggest question about Beat Hazard earlier, Eric, was, is one song that distinct from the other? Because that was my biggest complaint about Audio Surf. Like, I'd sort of like really carefully pick something and be like, oh, this is going to be weird and interesting and it has this beat and this solo and this like vocal part and it's going to like produce this weird level. And then it was just kind of like all the others I played.
It follows like ups and downs very well and instruments very well. So like if you have a downbeat country song by Tim McGraw, it's almost relaxing. Like you're just kind of cruising around. Enemies aren't coming all that fast. Your weapons aren't firing like crazy. And then you pick up something like, I don't know, Daft Punk or Dragon Force, crazy diamond metal stuff. It's going to be incredibly difficult, incredibly fast paced. And like that frustrating, got to get a better score. And so yeah, like
you'll notice.
You'll definitely notice. It's not completely, utterly different. It's all still that twin stick shooting, but you will pick up on the differences between songs and be like, oh, I know there's a guitar solo coming up. I better, you know, make sure I have mega bombs to use, and I get prepared for this giant wave of enemies that's going to come in. It's
fun. I put in the Carpenters and created a singularity in the game that not only collapsed the universe, but took my monitor with it.
Whoa.
My monitor buckled in and vanished into the singularity. And let me tell you, I only kept my SteelSeries mouse by hanging on to, you know, for dear life onto the cable, and it snapped.
And that was just the demo.
Yeah, I know. Seriously. I was like, good Lord, you know?
Yeah, that was the evaluation version. There is actually a demo on Steam. The game itself is $10.
Yep, just $10. It also has a survival mode, which is like play through an entire album, but you still only get the two lives that you would normally get, like, per song, so it's incredibly tough to get through.
The review's in our August issue, but try it now!
Yeah, it's cool. The other thing I have been playing, and I won't talk too much about, because it's not out for PCs yet.
God, here it comes.
Splinter Cell Conviction, which, It's out for consoles, so if you're really a huge fan, you could pick it up, I guess, but it's great. The stealth is there if you want it to be. There's action if you'd rather play it in a more very combat way. There's awesome co-op missions. I'm having so much fun with it. You can tell it's by the team that did, Vegas. Because there's like a sort of terrorist hunt mode and that good sort team. Of really good cover system. The AI is much better than Vegas, but yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with it. I'll be sure to talk more about it when all of you guys have gotten your hands on it. So yeah.
More fun co-op than the Modern Warfare 2 Spec Ops mode.
It's very different. The co-op in Splinter Cell is like a complete story, so you feel pretty invested, but it's maybe not as dramatic, you know? Like,
sure.
There's like no, like, C-130s, 10 time limits, and madness like that. Different, but very, very fun.
Sam needs to lighten up, you know what I mean? It's like, bad things happen to everybody, dude. his attitude just bugs me, so.
And I have been playing, quite a bit of Dragon Age and WoW as usual, but Battle of the Immortals, which it's in beta right now. It's MMO coming out from Perfect World. It's kind of action RPG, but what's really fun about it is just kind of all the ridiculous sidekicks they have in the game. Like right now I have a koala with a giant saw that is running around helping me slay mummies. And he has like a leather aviator goggles and hat.
Yes!
It is fantastic. Yes. And then I bought it's signed like the Wheel of Terror or something like that, where my ride is basically like a giant wheel that I sit in a chair in the middle of it, and it's made out of stone, and it just cruises around in a circle, and I can just like roll over people. It's awesome.
I bet I got a cooler ride this week.
Oh yeah?
Sorry to butt back in. I forgot about something. I too have been playing some WoW, and any WoW players out there will know there is a mount, which is a turtle, which actually makes you go no faster than if you were just walking around. But you have to fish for him, and I think I spent like 23 hours fishing in the past week to get this turtle.
Dude, don't you have a job?
You are not a WoW person.
You're not watching here.
With this and Mass Effect 2, between these obsessions, I'm concerned.
Eric, I for one will applaud your efforts.
Thank you, Josh, because he is awesome, and he swims really fast.
You can take care of him after he snaps. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. Yeah, it's basically every night when I would come home, like, Eric would be there fishing, and I'd be like, oh, so what are you going to do tonight? Oh, I'm just going to keep fishing. It's like, oh, okay. Like, I probably cycled through 4 or 5 different games, just kind of playing through them. No, I'm still fishing. But hey,
wow.
He's a man who knows what he wants, and he goes after it.
He does. Yeah. I will give you that.
His dedication is unwavering.
No question.
And then I've also been playing a lot of Neverdaunt 8-bit, which is like a fun... It's kind of like what you might picture an indie Lego universe would look like, where everything is very blocky. You can construct stuff construct stuff from units, like buildings on the fly. People own different parts of the land, so they make one. Like, I was just running around a labyrinth as my little Lego guy, and so it's pretty fun. I've just been playing around in there. As always, if you have a proclamation, inquiry, or just want to rant about something that's been making you angry lately, send an MP3 to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com or call us.
You may want to write that question down before you call. You don't have to, but...
Highly recommended.
Yeah.
Or call us toll-free at 877-404-1337, extension 724, and record your question there. If you aren't already a subscriber, we encourage you to become one. Just head on over to PCGamer.com and fill out our fancy subscription form, and we'll be happy to send you the best PC gaming magazine in existence every single month. On behalf of everyone here at PC Gamer, thanks for listening.
I got one more little thing. Because we recently got our survey results back, and we're noting that there's actually a huge overlap between PC gamers and squirrel enthusiasts. So I just want to encourage everybody. I'm going to be guest blogging on squirrely.net very soon. squirrely.net. And it's a great cutting-edge squirrel blog. It's not just, you know, squirrels themselves, but also squirrel garments for people, not squirrels, and squirrel issues. Why is there just this, like, deathly silence?
No, I'm just letting this happen. It's good.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I would think you guys would be more supportive of this.
I'm excited. I can't wait to see. I mean, what?
All right.
Is this going to be like a live blog situation?
The blog was actually started by no less than Leah Christian, who is Gary Whitta's girlfriend.
Cool.
And, yes, so, I'm going to be, contributing to the blog on a regular basis once I catch up on all my deadlines. Which I will soon.
I actually have some last-minute squirrel-related news, too.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay? I'll mean out to you.
Please, absolutely.
Well, so Michael Yazbek, Turkish developer at Tail Worlds for Mountain Blade. You're going to hear him interviewed here in a moment.
Oh, God, how could we have forgotten this? Oh, my God.
Yeah. We're going to throw this over Twitter and stuff and Facebook, so you'll see it there. But I'll be sure to post it in the podcast comments.
Please, everybody sit down. You want to sit down for this one.
Hang in there. So he's a designer for the game, and, you know, Mountain Blade's like medieval style combat. So and he's a listener of the podcast, which is always exciting. Because he knows Logan through the podcast to be a squirrel aficionado and a
my God, I'm shaking all over. I can't stop.
And an enthusiast.
I have to put my hands between my knees right now.
Yeah. When I showed this to Logan, he literally like fell down and went into convulsions.
I wept until I had no tears left, and then I wept tears of blood.
He fell to his knees in front of the monitor.
There's no exaggeration. So Michael went out of his way to create some custom avatars for us. That you can use in Steam or Twitter or whatever you'd like to use that has like a sort of square profile image. And they are squirrels wielding weapons and armor.
Mm-hmm.
Gladiator squirrels.
Yep.
Swedish king squirrels.
Yes.
Pirate squirrels with like little swords and...
We've already been contacted by the Library of Congress.
It's,
who wants to archive these avatars, so...
It's terrific. So you'll see those on our comments in a little zip file for you. There'll be a couple megs. And put them all over. Maybe we'll make a little like a Steam group or something, like the Squirrel Squad. That'll be fun.
Ooh, that's catchy. One more thing.
We're also giving away a $3,000 computer based on the Core i7-980X, which, as you may know, is Intel's new 6-core CPU. And... it's got a Radeon HD 5870 in it, and all you have to do is become a fan on our Facebook page. That's it.
Wow.
Simple as that. We're running also a page on it in the August issue, and once that is and it's run on the stands, then we'll hold the drawing.
That's incredible. I mean, just in terms of like basic input versus potential output, one click producing a $3,000 computer in your living room.
Amazing.
Wow.
What a world, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where you get free squirrel avatars, free computers. I mean, we give you everything.
Everything you need.
Yeah. We'd tear open our own abdomens and hand you our pancreas if we could.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speak for yourself. I happen to be quite fond of my pancreas.
Do I have to question your
commitment? Will tear open Josh's abdomen and tear out his pancreas and hand them to you if you want them.
Them?
And it.
Please, nobody request it. He probably will.
Okay, all right. Sorry. So, let's continue. Sorry.
Let us continue to the end. Thanks for listening, guys. Enjoy the interview right after this.
Later, Gators.
All right, so as promised, as a special edition of the podcast today, we have a special guest from the Mountain Blade Warband team. His name's Michael Yazbek. He's a designer at Tailworlds, all the way over in Turkey. Michael, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on your podcast. I've been listening for a very long time.
Great, glad to hear that. Yeah, glad to have fans in the development community. Yeah. All right, so Mountain Blade is really like an interesting animal on the PC, we think. We've been talking about it over the past couple weeks, talking about Warband and like the Star Wars Conquest mod. I'm really in love with that right now. But for people that aren't familiar with Mountain Blade, the type of game it is, the type of experience it is, what's kind of just a quick summary of the franchise and what experience people can get out of it?
Well, I can give you kind of a standard one-liner and then a little bit more than that as well. It's kind of its own genre. When you see people reviewing the game, they have trouble describing it as one genre. So it's kind of a kingdom building sandbox game and medieval combat simulator all in one. Basically, I like to think of it as a sandbox kind of playground. You know, when you were a kid, you might have pretended to be a knight with armor and go on adventures with your friends in the backyard. I certainly did when I was young. So this is kind of a nice fantasy world that people can get lost in. Although I shouldn't say it's fantasy because it is just medieval. But basically you can rule the entire map if you want to, but many of our players, myself included, some of us have games where we just go around and pretend to be Robin Hood, or we go around being abandoned and just pillaging and stealing and conquering castles and then just getting in fights. So, big open world medieval fighting game, and also a way that there's ways that you can build your kingdom up. You can ally with other kingdoms. There's so much stuff to do, actually. So it's, you definitely have to play it to really get the scope of it. Warband is certainly bigger than the first one, in terms of, you know, features and also world size. But.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. Yeah. I mean, so you're sort of this roaming adventurer within a fictional fantasy world, you know, roughly based on, existing sort of, what time period would you say roughly it's based on?
That's a good question, Evan. Mm-hmm. It's just medieval times. I'm not really a huge date buff.
Sure. Guy. That's fine. Me neither.
But, you know, you've got the kind of Arthurian knights in there. You've got German, kind of more barbaric guys with just big shields and swords. You've got Russian knights we call Vagirs. Genghis Khan is even in the game, the Kurigat faction. Then you have Safavids, they're called Serenids. So, it's kind of a mix of different empires across the world, all living in one nice little sandbox.
All living in harmony, that's right.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes. So, this is something I always try to describe to people. I always sort of struggle with it. As a system and a feature within Mountain Blade, it's the marriage system. And I think it's kind of fun and interesting and kind of a surprising thing to tell people about sometimes. They're not necessarily used to hearing about, you know, an RPG or a medieval action game having this sort of system. So how does the marriage system work within Mountain Blade, and why is it interesting or appealing to you guys in terms of putting that in the game?
Well, one thing that, people playing Mountain Blade in the past, and then even Warband, will notice is that every game that they have is always different, and the whole system is emergent and random, which means you're a person in the universe, in the map, and everything's happening around you. So I'll give you a quick example. I have one game I started at home, and I quickly got into mercenary duty within a kingdom that just happened to be at war at the beginning of the game. And then I got involved, thrown into a siege battle. The siege battle lasted, about an hour of real time because it took many, many rounds. I ended up leveling up 10 times in there. So that character is really in a different place than my other save game, which I have at work, where still it's just kind of slow and nobody's at war at the moment and I'm building up my forces. Mm-hmm. And everything is different. Every save game is different. Everybody's experience is different because everything is always changing and random. So that brings us to the marriage system, which I've got a save game that I'm having a lot of trouble impressing the ladies. I've gone to all the bards. I've gone to all the bards in all of the taverns and learned every poem. And I've been saying these poems and increasing my reputation with the ladies. And none of them want to get married still. And I've won tournaments and everything. So sometimes it's really hard. It depends on what's going on. Now, my friend Ali, our PR guy for the Turkish side of the company, he hit it off right away. And some girl said, you know, I just want to run away with you. And he didn't have to impress the father. He didn't have to make any political alliances. None of that. So like the rest of the game, everything's very different, and every character, every player is going to have a really different experience. So you kind of build a very unique story with how marriage and other things work. But to answer the question a little bit more formulaically, you will try to build up your reputation and renown. The easiest way to do that is enter tournaments. Tournaments get you access to feasts. And then from feasts, you can meet fathers who are trying to marry the daughters, and you can also meet the daughters there. So you can dedicate deeds to the daughters, like your victory in the tournament. You can also then go and learn poems after she's been impressed with your renown at that point. And then from there, you try to visit her every week in her castle. And eventually, after you impress her enough and you make some deals with her father, then you will be able to marry. And then that brings a whole slew of benefits, depending on if you're a man or a woman, actually. There's different benefits.
Terrific. Man, just hearing you list all that, just that process, things sure have changed. And in terms of like online dating today, that's crazy. but it makes for some fun game mechanics. So along those lines, I think like for us, like Mountain Blade on the PC represents a game you probably heard me bring up a lot on the podcast is Arma 2.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. And it's kind of within the same vein for me. An open, randomized, unscripted experience. And I mean, there's so much emphasis from big publishers today on games that, you know, arguably mere cinematic experiences that are very, you know, meant to produce like a linear, very high polished movie quality experience within the narrative. And I guess I like to hear you, you've already sort of mentioned that, mm-hmm. made the case for it a little bit in your comments so far, but I'd like to hear you sort of make the case a little bit for unscripted experiences on the PC and why they feel valuable to you. I mean, why did you guys take this approach to design rather than a straightforward, single game for everybody?
Well, those games certainly have their place and their value, but there's obviously a hole in that sort of gameplay in PC and console. I mean, what do we have right now? Just Grand Theft Auto, and that's kind of the big sandbox thing, but still there's a lot of scripted sequences in there, and your experiences actually are going to be pretty similar. I could maybe say half similar or something in Grand Theft Auto. I mean, most people are doing kind of the same things. But we saw a hole and we said, okay, yes, we can fill this. We can fill it with something that we love, which is medieval times, not the restaurant, just the combat and all of that. And also, you know, there's no horseback fighting. That's really not really been done to the degree that Mountain Blade does it. So that's one. Those are big reasons why Mountain Blade was first conceived and made. We would like to continue in that space because we feel it's a valuable experience. Freedom in your gaming is something that's a little bit risky because it also alienates people. Because my personal thoughts are that as we get older, we feel, you know, we're surrounded by structure all the time, and our entertainment experiences mirror that structure. We want scripted things. We want to be entertained. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I'll be writing about in the dev column.
Right. Yeah.
For you guys is that, you know, when you were children, you just made things up and your imagination gave you the entertainment. You produced it. But I think as we get older, we stop using our imagination and we stop producing our own entertainment. And I think that's kind of a shame. Certainly there's a place for both kinds of entertainment, but I do feel that it's important to have self-produced entertainment in the gaming space, because you walk away with these stories, you get to talk to your friends about crazy things that may never happen in your game, but happen in theirs, and it's like every game is its own little universe, because mm-hmm. everything is emergent and non-scripted.
For sure. I mean, those anecdotes are inherently valuable, we think. And, I mean, it's definitely, you kind of see it as you're expressing yourself through the game, right? In some way, whether, you know, you play a bandit in Mountain Blade, or, mm-hmm. you play a very noble king and, or you have lots of wives or something like that. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's a good thing to encourage. So I'm wondering, I mean, this is kind of a fun question I like to ask developers sometimes, mm-hmm. Especially when they have like unique settings or unique combat systems. Did you have any like in order to develop the, you know, the hack and slash, the swords and crossbows and shields gameplay and cavalry gameplay and Mountain Blade, did you guys get to test out any of that equipment yourselves? Do you have like, I'm just curious, like what sort of research do you base that on?
Yeah, we had sword fighting instructors come to our studio, and we also went to their places of practice. There's still a contingency of people that like to do that sort of traditional sword fighting in schools. I guess, you know, like martial arts and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some of that. So we did get in contact with those schools. They came here. We went there. We got a feeling for the weight and the speed of the weapons. And also, we have our own little mocap system set up in the office that we hook them up to, and had those teachers really kind of drive some of our animations and you know, teach us about sword swings and let us feel the weight. The horseback mechanics also, I mean, just going horse riding, that's something that's very powerful, just to feel the adrenaline. And I think that we've carried our experiences with those things into the game quite well, because I always feel the kind of the way that I do when I ride a horse.
So I'm wondering if, because it doesn't seem like it's something that gets a lot of attention, and I'm not even that familiar with it myself, but what the game development scene is like in Turkey right now and just the surrounding area, are you guys one of the only game developers in Turkey?
Well, I could say that we are the game development scene in Turkey, not to sound
sure.
arrogant or what have you, but if you're the only one, then you kind of are the scene. There are some browser game kind of like commercials. You go to like the telecom company here on their website. They have some stupid little games, and some companies are making those. We do have one social networking game company. They recently got some grant, Western funding there in Istanbul. I haven't met with them yet, but we might, you know, hang out with them at some point. But then there's some sort of Istanbul online kind of MMO thing, and, Turk Telecom, the big telecom giant, they bought the company that was making that, and, I don't know anybody who plays it. So basically, yeah, we are the game development scene. The other ones are just kind of making little flash games for companies and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Good to know. Terrific. So I'm wondering, you mentioned at the beginning of this this interview that you know, you guys see that sort of unscripted role-playing combat space as something you guys can continue to take advantage of. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can't say what you're exactly working on next, but can you sort of give soft confirmation that that's like the genre you guys are definitely going to keep pursuing, and you see that as your sort of your wheelhouse and your specialty at Tailworlds?
Yeah, I mean, I've got other game designs that I would love to work on, but for a studio like ours, when we're coming out of being indie, so to speak, and we're trying to develop ourselves as a kind of larger or more organized or more serious sort of studio, we do need to focus on what we do best and keep improving the core mechanics of it and exploring and expanding what we're good at. So yeah, it's safe to say that yeah, we're going to continue along the path that we are. I've got some things that I would love to talk about with you for what we may be doing, mm-hmm, with our next game, but yeah, certainly I could tell you off record. But
sure, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah, I mean it's something gamers forget about sometimes. I think you know, it's so tempting to say, well, gosh, you know, Mountain Blade would be excellent as an MMO if it just had like this amount of system in place and had instance combat and PvP and PvE. And it sort of brings me back to our discussion about XCOM last week. We were saying, well, you know, why doesn't 2K just make it like the original game? Why doesn't it make a turn-based strategy game? Well, 2K doesn't necessarily have a turn-based strategy studio. They have shooter studios and they have action game studios.
Exactly.
And they have to take their licenses and take them to their, their teams that have certain proficiencies and certain things that they're good at, and make something good out of it. So, yeah,
I was listening to that podcast actually today while I was making those squirrels, and that discussion and that the whole internet community is having, and that you guys just had recently, it is true what you said. I mean, they don't have a turn-based strategy developer. And also, I will reference what was said before. What turn-based strategy games are out there for people to kind of base designs off of that have been made right now? I mean, the last one was Heroes of Might and Magic 5. So they could just use XCOM as the normal one as complete source reference, but actually that is too difficult for people to get around. They'd have to really streamline it, that might take a lot more time to make than a first-person shooter. They've got the team that knows how to do that, and I think as long as they pepper it with something like a Rainbow Six 2 Vegas command or a Mass Effect 2 style command, and then maybe some home base like Mass Effect 2 has with the ship, you can do research improvements. That'll make maybe some of the naysayers happy. It'll make me happy. That's for sure, if they do, mm-hmm, that kind of stuff. They don't need to completely go like back to the original, but maybe a blend of the two, because they do have, you know, Rainbow Six and Mass Effect to reference off of, and that might make it easier for them to do something like that in between.
For sure. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they can come up with.
I'm curious though how much they might admit to changing their original idea based on all of the noise that the internet's been making and that other people are talking about, like you guys and so forth.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, I'd like to think that, you know, I'm pretty sure they're going to be shooting for a end of year launch. It seems like they wouldn't want too much of a long lead, so they're probably
Oh.
Probably decently in the development, but who knows? We'll see. Yeah, we'll be finding out our next issue that's coming out next month in May.
Yeah. You mentioned something like, oh, Mountain Blade would make a good MMO, if we just slapped on these things. If you look on our forums and other forums and so forth, people are wondering really like, why couldn't they just make a multiplayer campaign? It'd be so easy. Just click the enable button and, you know, it'd be perfect. No worries. But it kind of doesn't work like that. I mean, I'd love it if we could just click that button, but
yeah,
then
you have to make the button.
You've got to make that proverbial button. And all of these other design issues and all of the time, the development time, which we're happy to spend time on doing, but it's like it's a whole nother project. That adds another year at least of figuring out and polishing it and making sure that it works the way that we'd want it to, basically to do it justice, not just tack it on, so to speak.
Of course, yeah. All right, Michael, well, thanks for joining us. I'm sorry that we're out of time here, but I wanted to, before we split, I want to give you a chance just to make another case for Mountain Blade and just sort of a quick summary for what the experience is and why people should be interested in on the PC.
If you've ever had a love for swords and armor, sharpened steel, any of that, Braveheart, Gladiator, Alexander, as horrible as that movie was, then really you ought to pick Warband up, because you won't find an experience like this. Leading your men into battle, growing them, it almost has this kind of Pokemon-ish vibe to it. You know, you're leveling up your troops, you collect all these different troops from the different factions, build up your kingdom. It's a wonderful experience. There is nothing else like it. We are in our own genre, so if you want to experience a new genre in gaming, then yeah, definitely. Not to mention the multiplayer. It's fantastic. I would say it's the new Counter-Strike because, yeah, we've got such a frantic and fast and competitive mode.
So in summary, it's the medieval Pokemon Counter-Strike, and that's terrific, I'm sure.
Although I'm not sure how many PC gamers have played Pokemon. I certainly did. No shame in that, guys.
No, not at all. It. Even if you're 35. It's pretty addictive. All right, Michael. Well, thanks again. Thanks for your time. I hope it's not too late there in Turkey. I'll let you get to dinner and or bed.
No, don't worry about it. You know, crunch time, we're still late. Still used to staying up very late. So this is definitely normal time for me.
All right. Good to hear. Well, thanks.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, Evan.
It's a pleasure. Yeah. Talk to you again soon. Thanks.
Just after, right after he finishes this question, like before the audio is actually like a millisecond before it completes, just have us going, "F you," put in the next question.
Wow, I mean, it can happen if you really
that's
want
what we're
to.
Doing. Yes,
that was just a serving suggestion. Is this a Tardcast?
Hi.
Now that Evan is here.
That was good timing.
This week in PC gaming, two zombie hunting parties cross paths. One of the survivors. Oh, was that too loud?
No, I'm sorry. No, I was just trying to add something.
Your microphone can't handle it, so maybe turn down your volume.
Ooh, sure. They did a full face transplant, including all the muscles and nerves in Spain.
Face off?
Is it totally? That's exactly what it is.
Wow.
They took his face off?
Is it a guy or a girl?
A guy this time.